Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast of the 27th of July, 2021, Tuesday. Told you Tuesday would get here. Mondays suck, but Tuesday will get here, and I fixed the microphone problem. So there's no microphone problem today. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. Don't forget about the Curse program. Bonus show every Saturday, 12:01 a.m. at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Good times had by most. And don't forget about our lovely sponsor, Ancient Life Oil. If you're in the market for some CBD, go to AncientLifeOil.com. They've got the CBD oil that you put under your tongue. They've got the ointment you rub on your joints that work, that ache. It works. It's an amazing, amazing substance. 100% pure organic CBD oil. And actually, this month, July, you buy one of the ointments, you get one free. It's right there on the webpage, AncientLifeOil.com. Don't forget to add promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of the great deals that are already there. Go to AncientLifeOil.com. Okay, we've got a lot to get to, and I want to get to it all as quickly as possible. So let's start. There is a lot, of course, going on. The Olympics are going on. Is anybody actually paying attention to the Olympics? Honestly, the opening ceremony, which I saw clips of online, and it's pretty cool. I don't know what it is. China put on, I can understand what China put on a hell of an opening ceremony last time they held the Olympics, whenever it was, because, you know, they say do something absolutely spectacular that's dangerous and seemingly impossible, or we'll kill you. It's like, oh, okay, that's what the Chinese communists can do. In Japan, they're a little bit freer than that, so they can't really threaten that. But they did this thing with the drones, hundreds of drones, apparently, where they made a globe up in the sky, in the night sky, so you couldn't see the drones sitting there, and they had the flashing light. It was very cool looking, but it was also wildly unwatched. It was in the lowest rated opening ceremony in 33 years, which is a lot. It's saying something. 33 years, a long time in the Olympics. But, you know, Olympics have changed quite a bit in 33 years. I've got to be honest about that as well. And I look at this and I think, well, that's pretty bad. Certainly not good. And not boding well for everything that is to come. Because the Olympics are just getting started. It's supposed to be, you know, the big, everybody's excited, and you'll look at it, the opening ceremony and the first few events, and then you sort of lose your interest after that. You're not supposed to lose your interest this quickly. It's kind of funny because NBC News PR, NBC Sports PR, I'm sorry, tried to polish the turd. They're trying to to save themselves. See, they sell advertising. And you think, well, they've paid for the rights to broadcast the Olympics. So NBC Sports is on the hook for the $1 billion or whatever they promised to broadcast the Olympics. But they've also, you think, well, they've made up their money because they've sold all of their advertising. Well, the advertising, the companies that are buying advertising aren't stupid. They buy advertising. They probably bought it a long time ago under the assumption that there's going to be a lot of audience. And they have, and don't even get me started about lawyers, but they have lawyers in there that negotiate all of these things. And the rates that they pay are based upon a bare minimum number of viewers for the advertising. If they don't get that bare minimum number of viewers, then you get a refund, or you can get out of it or whatever is built into your contract. Because if you're going to pay $5 million for a 1 minute ad, I don't know that that's the number, but if that's what you're going to pay, it's going to be under the guise of there's going to be, 20 million people watching, or at least have a chance of 20 million people watching. So you're paying that much. If you're going to pay $5 million for a minute's ad and you find out that there's only, 2 million people watching because it's the woke Olympics and people just aren't interested in that, then you're going to be a little ticked off. So you have your lawyers built into your contract for the time that there be these contingencies. Maybe the rate goes down to $2 million instead of $5 million. Or maybe you can get out of it altogether if you so choose. So it's not good for NBC, which frankly makes me feel good as an American, because NBC News has turned into such a horrible company that any of their appendages suffering brings me joy. But this morning, a guy who is he's the managing editor at the Sports Business Journal, whatever that is, he tweeted out some statistics. His opening ceremony, 17 million viewers in prime time for NBC, down big from past summer games, as expected. Likely new low. And then he's got the history of the last five Olympics, right? In Rio in 2016, there were 26.5 million people watching. So 17 million down to 17 million from 26.5 million. London 2020, 40 million, 40.7 million, so really 41 million, watched the opening ceremonies. Now that was the all-time high, apparently, as it went down after that, or before that. It was building up to that. Beijing in 2018 had 35 million, then it was 26 million, then it was 27 million. To respond to that, NBC Sports PR, and you think a PR firm or PR job, people with that job would have a better sense of this. You just ignore it. Just let it go. You're making it a bigger story. You're commenting on it makes it a story. They said, adding context, colon, in the last 5 years span between Summer Olympics, award shows are down 68 to 72% in viewership. Okay. Well, apropos of nothing, speaking of apples and oranges, why not? Well, the reason those viewerships are down significantly is for the exact same reason. The exact same reason that people aren't watching the Olympics is the exact same reason people aren't watching the Golden Globes, the Oscars, the Grammys, the Emmys, or the Tonys, or whatever else they've got to throw in. I think they've got the EGOT covered. And that's because they're sick of being preached to by rich jackasses about liberal politics and being called horrible, horrible people because they don't share the liberal politics of it. Or they're just disinterested in politics and they don't want to watch some rich, like watching somebody who's wealthy talk about how unfair this country is and how horrible it's just wrong and you can't get ahead like you did. You did. You did, Elizabeth Warren. You did, Joe Biden. Somehow you managed, with an idiot son, managed to rack up one of the all-time fortunes in the state of Delaware while, quote-unquote, doing public service. So don't tell me how unfair this country is. I agree, this country is unfair that you are not in prison, to be perfectly honest with you. But to sit there and say that, award shows are down, too. See, the only reason the Olympics aren't down and won't be down as much as the Oscars, as much as the Tonys, not because people don't care all that much, it's because people actually will go, I want to watch Simone Biles. You watch Simone Biles, what she does with the human body is amazing. She is the best that ever has been and probably the best that ever will be. And she's going to have two nights, well, I think three or four nights, actually, where she's going to be the star. They're going to compete for the individual all-around. They're going to do the individual events where she's qualified, and then they're going to do the team things. So people will tune into that. People will tune in for things like the track and field. I want to see who the world's fastest man is. I want to see somebody jump 28, 29 feet or whatever. There are certain things that people will watch. And then the rest of it, they're just going to tune out. So by default, almost, NBC will do better than the awards shows, because even though people are sick of the preaching, and I bet you they won't watch the award ceremonies, the medal ceremonies, but they'll watch the competition. They just want to know who wins. With it being on the other side of the planet, you know exactly when they're going to air it, so you don't have to sit around and go, keep flipping back and find out what in the hell this thing is. No, they tell you when they're going to air it. But it's not the interest it used to be. And there's no question about that. The ratings have tanked significantly, no matter what kind of spin NBC Sports PR puts on it. People aren't interested. NBC News or NBC Sports and NBC News can't admit the real reason behind it. My column is going to be about this too, the woke Olympics. I think, I could be wrong, but you know, it's bound to happen sooner or later that I'm going to be wrong. Hadn't happened yet, but it's bound to happen sooner or later. I think people are tuning out before they even bother to tune in, before anybody even has a chance to be an obnoxious leftist. I think people are tuning out going, you know what? I'm not going to watch. I know what's going to happen. There is going to be some left-wing nut job's going to get up on the podium, either because of third place. It doesn't matter what medal they're in. That woman who whined and complained about them playing the national anthem in the trials got the bronze, and came in third in the tryout. She's whining while the two actual winners were respecting the flag. She was causing a show. So whoever gets on the podium first and does something, whatever it is, the raising of the fist, the taking of the knee, the turning of the back, the disgust, the towel over the head, the shame, whatever it is that they come up with to show that they are down with whatever cause happens to be fashionable at any given moment with the left, they will, I mean, that person right there will essentially be given a show on MSNBC. The Olympics are a wholly owned subsidiary of NBC right now. They will be on the Today Show. They will be on with Rachel Maddow. They will be on with Morning Joe. They will be on everywhere. They might as well be given a contract with the network. And when that happens, if it's somebody who takes a knee, then somebody else will go, well, I can't just take a knee. When I'm up on the podium to become a left-wing hero, I have to find another way. I'll take a knee and turn my back to the flag and put a towel over my head and maybe set myself on fire like that monk did in protesting war. You know, whatever it is, it's just going to continue to ramp up and ramp up. And the more that happens, the further you get away from what is really the Olympic spirit. The Olympic spirit is you are not really there competing for yourself, although you're the one competing. You are competing there for national pride. You are representing the United States of America to see who has the fastest, the strongest, the ones who can jump the highest, the ones who can do this, the best. In the whole world, that's what it is, or was. I'm sorry, it's not that anymore. Now it's a long Nike commercial or a Reebok commercial or an Adidas commercial or whatever it is commercial, nonstop. This sort of started, I remember, what year? The original Dream Team, I think, was like 92. And I remember Michael Jordan because the official outfitter, this tells you how screwed up things have gotten away from the Olympic spirit, the official outfitter of the men's basketball team, maybe the entire Olympic team, but at least the men's basketball team, the one who made the stupid windbreakers, the really hideous windbreakers that you've seen them all in pictures. That was Reebok. Well, Michael Jordan wasn't allowed to wear Reebok. He wasn't allowed to wear any logo competitor to Nike except for Nike. So he had to walk around with a flag draped over his one shoulder. If you've ever seen pictures of the Dream Team receiving their medals, you notice that Michael Jordan is like a scarf or something, like half a scarf. He's wearing an American flag draped over his shoulder. It's not because he's super pro-American, although I have no reason to think he isn't. It was because contractually he had a lot of money on the line. He could get really sued and screwed by Nike if he's out there. You imagine how many photographers were probably desperately trying to look, let's find an angle. We need to get a shot of Michael Jordan with the Reebok logo on his shoulder. Like all the other players out there, he was Mr. Nike. He could not be seen with anything but a Nike thing. They didn't get it because he was draped in a flag. But from then on, things had changed so dramatically that it's like every year you see, well, here's what Ralph Lauren has designed for the athletes to wear as they enter the ring for the opening ceremony. And it's like, why not just let them dress? Why not just leave them alone? Why don't we just treat them like adults? And then you realize, no, this is all just a massive corporate thing now. It's not the Olympics. It's not about national pride. It's not about anything but making a ton of money for the corrupt Olympic Committee, which is already corrupt because you can buy where the Olympics are. It's like, hey, I'd really like to get the... How many millions of dollars have to end up in your bank account for me to get your vote in this thing? Remember that scandal from a few years ago? You think they solved that problem? No. They've solved the problem of people being aware of that problem. That's how it works with these international organizations. People are still getting rich, just like the World Cup. A lot of bribery going on over there, too. People feign outrage, but at the end of the day, they don't give a damn. Most of the cities, by the way, who put up billions of dollars and build new stadiums and everything for Olympic Games, put in a fortune, make these IOC people rich and everything, those cities get no long-term lasting bump. Go to Rio right now. You can go to all the venues that they used at the Rio Olympics. And oh boy, howdy, you can remember all the good old times and all the wonderful events of the Rio Olympics, except you can't because most of it's overgrown. It looks like, it looks like Chernobyl. It looks like something that was just abandoned. I'm not really sure. Maybe we do have far too many events in the Olympics. Maybe that's part of the problem. If you just get back to the basics, maybe people would watch. It wouldn't cost so much to attend. It wouldn't cost so much to put on. But then again, the people who put it on and the people who organized the whole thing, they wouldn't have that much to sell. They wouldn't get rich. So instead, you get surfing as an Olympic sport. Ever get the feeling you're getting ripped off? Yes. Okay. So I'm gonna shift it up here. Talk about this Robin DiAngelo. If you don't know who Robin DiAngelo is, first of all, get on your knees right now and thank God. But you know her work, and we're all living in her wake, in her destructive wake. She is the author of the book White Fragility. She, along with Henry Rogers, aka Ibram X. Kendi, are responsible right now, more so than even Democrats. They're the fertilizer, the Democrats, they're the BS the Democrats have embraced. They are the ones who have brought you all the racial division that you can possibly imagine. And then some, you know, at a discount. They made millions. Robin DiAngelo's book, White Fragility, has sold more than 1 million copies. Her second book, I forget what it is, like Nice Racism or something, just came out. Didn't sell so well. Sold less than 3,000 copies the first week. It's not really burning up the charts. But her first book is the one that matters, because that's the one that the left is using as going, oh my goodness, you see, you're a racist. Everybody's a racist, and you are, if you've heard somebody talk about you're a racist because of your skin color, just because you exist with that skin color. That idea comes from Robin DiAngelo and Ibram Kendi. Not originally, but it has been brought back. It has been churned back to the surface by these two grifters who have gotten filthy rich off of it. So she, Robin DiAngelo, is still a celebrity on the left. She still gets, I think it's $20,000 to do virtual speeches for school districts. And she, I assume, has a lot of them. You only hear about them when they're in your area. But she goes to, she was in Virginia not that long, not even actually in Virginia. It was a video conference and it was 1 hour long and it was very regimented out. And it was $20,000 because schools are just flush with cash. They got nothing better to do than give it to a white lady who will tell other white people how horribly racist they are. You want to talk about racism, that a white lady could get rich complaining about racism against black people is a testament to just how racist things are. Anyway, she was on a podcast. Doesn't matter the podcast. And the host asks her about comedy. I want to illustrate how joyless leftists are, how absolutely devoid of anything really seemingly a normal person would find worth living, the left has become. I don't understand how they get new recruits. I don't know who's sitting there going, well, this person's telling me that I'm horrible, that society's horrible, that the country is horrible, our culture is horrible, and it's stolen. Everything I do is just awful. Yes, yes, I'd love to subscribe to your newsletter. Here, take some of my money. I would love to understand the psyche of that. But listen to these two liberals talking about, well, this first one is just the podcast host posing the question about comedy.
How do we deal with the fact that we may have laughed at a racist joke, told a racist joke, sat in the audience of at a comedy club and heard racist jokes? As a Jew, you know, the jokes were fine if they were about other people, but the minute someone made a joke about a Jew, it was offensive. And right. Suddenly I was like, I didn't, and you know, and suddenly that comedian might not have been found funny anymore. How does one cope with that? And that's just one tiny use case.
Okay, so you see, how do you do that? You laugh. I don't know what accent he has. Maybe it's vaguely Australian, but he's sitting there. How do you do that? You laugh at something. You may have once laughed at a racist joke. You may have once laughed at a race. Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you were alive when comedy was legal, you more than likely laughed at a lot of racist jokes. Jokes that are now deemed horribly, that are hate crimes, that'll get you put in jail in some countries. There's no question you have laughed at jokes like that. You know why? Because they're damn funny. They weren't racist. They were lampooning racism. They were belittling racism to make it into a punchline. That's what they did. And to Robin DiAngelo, I don't know how you can make so much money for literally being an idiot and still be miserable all the time. So what does Robin DiAngelo say? She embraces exactly that. She goes out and talks about how Family Guy, South Park, and The Simpsons are racist. A lot of times comedy is used just as cover for racism. And you think, well, we can get away with this. If we do it, we can be, if you want to be racist, go into comedy or something. Listen to this idiot yourself. Recognize that she's making more money than you are. She's making more money than the two of us together combined are making probably this week from the sale of her stupid book and from her appearance fees. And this is what she comes up with.
So comedy is, I think it's an excuse to get to be racist, right? Like irony. And I think TV shows like Family Guy and South Park and maybe a little bit The Simpsons, right? Allowed white people to be racist self-consciously, right? Like I know I'm being racist and therefore it doesn't count and it's okay.
What do you want to be when you grow up, Junior? Well, Dad, gee, shucks, I don't know. I kind of want to be a racist, but it doesn't really seem like a big growth industry to me. Well, it's not generally, but, and I would recommend against just being a flat-out racist. However, Junior, I've done some research on this, and according to Robin DiAngelo, who is the sole arbiter of what is and is not racist, you can be a racist if you just go into comedy. Then you can make racist jokes all you want, just like, and then to cite, she cites three cartoons. I don't know if she's ever seen The Simpsons, but nobody's white on The Simpsons. The best, they're like yellowish orange. They're not. Also, they have three fingers. you know, weird things like that. To sit there and say this, and I look at this, I see the Simpsons are white people. That to me lets me know that you have some sort of neurosis, psychosis, something. There's something fundamentally wrong with you as a human being, that you are incapable of joy. Now, I get it. You want to get me mad at the Simpsons, I'll probably be right there with you. They're not funny anymore. And that is something worth being mad about. They've been on the air too long, and they've run out of ideas. I think they probably need to make the kids older, advance them in real time, if they're going to keep this thing going forever. Because otherwise, they've done everything over, like, 25 years. It's not... Plus, they've gotten... PC when they got rid of Hank Azaria doing Apu Nahasapitapetalon or whatever his name was, because it's a white guy doing the voice of a an Indian guy, and that's not right. And like, it's a freaking acting job. Can anybody have any content in the front of their underpants to stand up to these people and say, get over yourselves, get a life? I'm not interested in, it's a job, okay? It's a job. I won the job. Period. End of story. Shut up. But they don't. Somebody needs to tell Robin DiAngelo to just shut the hell up. But they won't. See, because comedy is, it's a way to be racist. No, it's not. It's a way to escape idiot leftists like you, Robin DiAngelo. It's a respite. It's a breathing. It's a quick breath while drowning in a sea of stupidity shoveled upon us by people like you, Robin DiAngelo. Comedy is that moment. Sports used to be that moment. And it's not anymore. Part of, you know, the reason people aren't watching the Olympics. Part of the reason people didn't watch the NBA Finals. Part of the reason people didn't watch the NFL nearly as much as they used to is... I don't need this crap in my life. I need sports to get away from the crap in my life. I don't need, you know, you got some 16-year-old kid coming home from school telling you need to walk to work because your car is killing the planet. Environmentalism, you're all ruining it. Your generation. And you go, you know what? I really want to just smack this kid, but I can't. So I'm going to turn on the TV, and instead of a 16-year-old snot-nosed ungrateful brat saying that stuff to you, you've got a 25-year-old multimillionaire saying that stuff to you. And you go, why would I watch this? Why would I watch this? I'll go watch Home and Garden. I'll watch HGTV, and they'll build that farmhouse back. And that's it. That's it. You want to know why all these home improvement shows have gotten so popular during the pandemic? Because nobody's screaming at you about your politics. You imagine a crew putting a roof on an old farmhouse or pulling down some barnwood going, you know what? Affirmative action is really the only way we're going to get out of this. And we really need to stop evil whitey, and corporate taxes just simply are not high enough. And you're just sitting there trying to watch these people hammer a nail. No, you'd get a hammer and hit yourself in the head before you'd watch that garbage. But that's the world Robin DiAngelo would like to have. I am not even exaggerating. Listen to what she says, basically. What she says in this next one is that it's okay to make fun of white people because white people are evil, obviously, and we are at the top of the food chain, which is a little bit racist. You know, you want to be racist. There you go, Robin. You're quite good at it. But it's okay to do that. But if to make fun of people of color in any way, shape, or form, or even a joke at the expense of people of color is wrong. It's horrible. It's racist because they are the ones who are oppressed. They're largely, I would say, oppressed. Anybody's oppressed in this equation. It would be black people by a white lady writing books about how black people are oppressed, making a whole bunch of white ladies and white men go, oh my goodness, I must really embrace my white savior complex. You really want to talk about oppression. That's where I would put it, but that's just me. Anyway, listen to Robin DiAngelo wrap this up and say basically you can make all the fun you want of Whitey, but not anybody off white.
I'm still reinforcing racist tropes and ideologies and stories. It's still being reinforced in everybody's mind who's listening. And so I don't think it's benign to do it in a joking way. And there is a concept in comedy called punching up, not down. So, you know, you want to punch up. There's very different power dynamics, and it doesn't hurt in the same way. It doesn't invoke a deep, deep, centuries-long history of oppression when you poke fun at, say, white people. But it's very, very different when you poke fun at people of color.
Very, very different. Very. Who wouldn't want to have this person come over? Hey, you're having a party. Hey, you mind if I bring Robin DiAngelo? No, I don't. Well, she's in town, and the only way I can come is if I can bring her. She's crashing on my couch, and I can't really go to a party without her. All right, and you bring her in, and what is she going to do? What is the ethnicity of the music that we're hearing? Because if it is not appropriate to the host of the party, that would be a cultural appropriation and wrong. And so I would grouse about that. But even still, even if it is race appropriate, imagine. This is what these people talk about. Even if it is race appropriate, it is appropriated probably from some other type of music that has, you know, roots in Africa. And therefore, it is ultimately cultural appropriation. You want to know why leftists are so miserable? You want to know why some fat flannel jackass decides to confront Tucker Carlson in a bass shop and a fishing shop and go, oh, this is great. I must film it because the world needs to know. You wonder why? It's because of what you just heard. It's that mentality. And I call it, I've always called it Michael Stipe's disease. I mentioned it on the show before. Michael Stipe disease. Michael Stipe was the lead singer of REM. And he just seemed miserable all the time. No matter, REM could be selling 10 million records right at that very moment. REM selling out Madison Square Garden. And they go, oh, hey, we're MTV. Michael Stipe, how you doing over there? Well, you know, it's pretty good. I don't know. It's just, I'm trying to get psyched up for this concert, but it's rather difficult knowing that while there are 22,000 screaming people out there having fun, that's somewhere on the face of the earth, there's someone who's not having fun. And that's the person that's haunting me. And you're just sitting there going, oh my God, dude. Do sharp objects need to be hidden from Michael Stipe? And then you realize, no, that's just how he is. That is fun for Michael Stipe. That is joy for Michael Stipe. This is a good time. If you've ever known anybody who's a hypochondriac, they're never happier than when they're sick or when they're talking about being sick, whether they're actually sick or not, it doesn't matter. I had a friend. It was always either coming down with something, in the throes of something, or just getting over something. And he couldn't do things. Oh, you know, I'd love to go, but I can't. He wanted to be convinced to go out all the time. And after a while, we stopped convincing him. We used to convince him. We used to knock on his bedroom. Then we started, me and my friend George, instead of trying to convince him to come out with us, we'd ask him, and then we'd kind of stopped asking. And we started just stopping by his house on the way home after being out. So 2:30 in the morning, drunk, stinking of Coney dogs from Lafayette, Coney Island, downtown Detroit. Knocking on his bedroom window and waking his ass up and telling him how much fun we had and how much fun he didn't have sitting at home. It was probably rude, but I don't care. You can be miserable all you want. You can be as miserable. If that's the way you want to live your life that way. It's when you impose it on others, or when you seek to impose it on others, when you actively pursue policies to impose that misery on others. That's where you lose me. That's where you lose my respect. That's where I want nothing to do with you. So you become Michael Stipe, where you're at a party and you weren't, I guess if you're just dumped by your girlfriend, I get it, while you're sitting in the corner sulking. or if that's your move to get a new girlfriend or whatever. I could understand that to a certain extent. But if that's how you just spend your days because you saw a documentary about how children are starving somewhere or how cow flatulence is going to destroy the world and you demand everybody else become a vegetarian, not only vegetarian, but vegan because of it, you're not really following the Dale Carnegie course of how to win friends and influence people. Let's just leave it at that. All right. I think that's a good place to leave it. So I'm looking at my Twitter feed. I'm looking at all the things I've sent around and all the things. We're going to get into a little bit of this COVID stuff. And I don't honestly know. I don't honestly know what's going on with this, but it is... You look at New York, and they're putting masks on everybody. We'll get to that. And then you see this story from TMZ, just as an aside. And you think, why are you missing? Why are you missing? You just look at how this country, this planet, is going to hell in a handbasket. Outer space. There's a giant asteroid headed our way. There's a notable nearish collision on Earth, or at least one that's looming. And the object that may be about to crash is traveling at 18,000 miles per hour. NASA has sounded an alarm that a giant asteroid is about to pass Earth. It's somewhere between 318 and 720 feet in length, about the size of the Taj Mahal and the Great Pyramid of Giza. Things even got a name. 2008 G0200 or 20. I don't know what the hell it is. But it's going to pass. Now, it's not all that close. It'll be the closest encounter for a while. But it says when we say near collision, it's all relative. It's supposed to come as close as 2.8 million miles to our planet. Now, for my money, I've seen both Armageddon and I guess it was Deep Impact. Armageddon was the superior movie. Deep Impact is fine, but not nearly as good. Morgan Freeman carries far too much of that movie. But the kid story, stupid. But I think we should use it. One of these suckers is going to hit us one day, right? It just is. We all know that. They seem to be coming closer and closer. Shouldn't we be trying out whatever defenses we have for blowing one of these suckers up or landing rockets on these things as they approach and then shifting their trajectory or something like that? Shouldn't we try something like this? You don't want your first life or death situation to be, you know, game time. You take some practice swings in the cages, don't you? You warm up a little bit. I think we should look at this not as an opportunity. Ooh, we can look really closely at this asteroid and go, no, we can look and see if we can blow this sucker up. Because someday we're going to have to blow one of these suckers up. It'd be better we get this practice under our belt now, I would think. Looking at the Twitter machine just now, I see disclose.tv. I've seen it. They're kind of liberal. But alleged news outlets. Just in. Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft, YouTube, and other big tech companies will now add content to a shared counterterrorism key database, aiming to crack down on material from white supremacists and far-right militias, according to Reuters. Okay, fine. I mean, if there are white supremacists and far-right militias out there that aren't actually infiltrated with nothing but, you know, 90% FBI informants, like the so-called plot to get Gretchen Whitmer. Okay. But nothing on BLM Antifa. Nothing. They're free to still communicate, organize, plot, coordinate attacks. You go down this street, we'll go down this street. There's a pile of bricks at this corner. Make sure you get them. The police sneak up behind them and throw your Molotov cocktails. That's so you can still do that. But you're two guys nobody's ever heard of in a mythical white supremacist organization. And the entirety of tech is going to work with the government. George Orwell is rolling over in his grave going, 1984 was a cautionary tale, not a how-to manual. I hate to break that to you, but that's how it is, or at least how it was supposed to be. They took it the wrong way. Taking the wrong way. Let's see, where do we go from here? Let's go to Ginger Goebbels here at the White House. At the daily press briefing, now this is funny because it's sad. And it's typical of the left. The White House today announced that they're going to keep travel restrictions in place. Now, there are people, you hear them complaining every once in a while, whose loved ones are overseas, they married a foreign national or whatever, and their spouse cannot get back into the country. A friend of mine named Ellen is in that boat, as a matter of fact. And it just, the government doesn't care. There's no reuniting of families there. Now, they'll reunite illegal alien families. Oh, man, they'll move hell and high water to get illegal aliens back together with their families. They march across the border. They'll send you anywhere in the country. You are a priority. But actual tax-paying, productive, contributing members of society, the Democratic Party, and the Biden administration in particular, has no use for you. No good use for you whatsoever. Well, if you thought we were inching back to normal, you're wrong. You're wrong, and you're going to find out sooner rather than later that you are wrong. You have, this is Ginger Goebbels from today, announcing, the White House announcing that travel restrictions, meaning you can't come here, which also means you can't go there, for pretty much the rest of the world are going to continue for now.
Where we are today, and I think you've seen this, and those of you who have asked, we've confirmed this for, with the Delta variant, we will maintain existing travel restrictions at this point for a few reasons. The more transmissible Delta variant is spreading, both here and around the world. Driven by the Delta variant, cases are rising here at home, particularly among those who are unvaccinated, and appear likely to continue in the weeks ahead. And to get to the other part of your question, the CDC just advised Americans against travel to the United Kingdom this past Monday, given the surge in cases.
Yeah, don't go to the UK, don't go anywhere, don't go. And then you sit there and you go, well, if the Delta variant is the most prevalent variant or whatever form of the virus racing through the country, and the Delta, they're very coy about this. It's the Delta variant. You think, did it start in the Delta quadrant? What's going on? No. It started in India. We all know it started in India because it used to be called the Indian variant. And then they said, we're just going to call it the Delta variant. Because they were afraid. They don't want anybody calling it the Wuhan virus, so on and so forth. So it's the Delta variant from India. How did that get here? How do you think that got to the United States of America? How do you think it managed to travel around the world? Is it through legal channels? Is there a lot of international travel happening? There's some, but not a lot. Or do you think it's more likely that our porous, open southern border, where, you know, no holds are barred and anybody can come walking across, and they're given three hots and a cot, you think it's more likely that the Delta variant came in a flight from New Delhi to New York, or it came in a flight to Mexico City and then marched up the coast of Mexico into Texas and was greeted with a hug and a Coke and a smile at the southern border by the Biden administration? See, because it's breaking out, and it has been breaking out in a lot of places across the country. Now, I could believe that maybe one person flew from New Delhi to New York. But that wouldn't explain an outbreak in Nebraska. That wouldn't explain outbreaks all around the country. What would explain outbreaks all across the country is our government dispersing illegal aliens the way they have been dispersing illegal aliens. I come into the country. Where would you like to go? All right, you're going to Omaha. You got family in Omaha? We'll send you to Omaha. Okay. Next, where are you from? Ooh, Missoula, Montana. Got that right there. Let's do that. We're going to send you to Missoula, Montana. There is only one entity that is Johnny Appleseeding people across the country, and that is the federal government. It's not the airlines. It's not business. It is the federal government shipping people to pretty much wherever they can claim they have family. So that would explain why the Delta variant, how the Delta variant got to be so prevalent, got to be everywhere. Wouldn't it? Would to me. It does to me. Anyway, that makes sense. So cutting down on travel or keeping travel restrictions in place, Ginger Goebbels, okay, fine. But the killer is already in the house. The call is coming from the basement. Jason is in the pantry or wherever it is you're going next. And you invited him in, more than likely. Maybe, just maybe, while you sit there and you tell people they can't go anywhere and people can't come here, I might take you a little more seriously. And your concern about the Delta variant, and your concern that people get vaccinated, if you didn't leave the back door open. It's like going into somebody's house, your parents going, you make sure you shut that front door. You shut that front door because we've got the air conditioning on. And we don't want you wasting the air conditioning in this house. We're not air conditioning the whole outside. Blah, everything you heard as a kid. And you go into the back, and there, and the kitchen door is wide open, and the kitchen window is wide open. They're not cooking. It's not because there's a bunch of smoke or stink or whatever. No, it's just the kitchen door is wide open. You go, why is this door open? Don't ask questions. Did you shut the front door? Make sure you shut the front door. Well, if you're at all concerned about your electric bill, the back door being open and the windows being open in the back, that's just as big a problem as the front door being open, if not bigger, because you can, the people flying here from the UK, theoretically, will be able to prove if they're vaccinated or be able to prove that they have a negative COVID test, right? Somebody marching across the Rio Grande, somebody rescued trying to swim the Rio Grande, comes from a third world hellhole. They can't prove that. They can't prove that. Even if they swear 6 ways from Sunday that they've gotten the vaccine, I wouldn't believe them because their governments are corrupt. Not to mention that I just wouldn't believe them to begin with. They're trying to break into the country. They're dishonest people. So if you're going to keep travel restrictions in place, White House, it would carry a lot more weight if you closed the southern border to anybody. Anybody caught is immediately deported, period, end of story. If you're really concerned, if you want everybody to be concerned about the Delta variant and you want people lining up to get the vaccine, then show us that you're actually really concerned about this and not just using this as an opportunity by shutting down the southern border. Instead, what do you see? You see footage after footage after footage of conga lines, 200, 300 illegal aliens, not only marching across the Rio Grande, but marching through gates that are opened under orders from this administration to come on in. And then they're marched right into vans. What are we told? We're told that about a third of them test positive for COVID. And another third of them, before they're released into the country, which is insane, not just because of the pandemic, irrespective of the pandemic, but a third of them are refusing the vaccine. Okay, Americans get a choice. Illegal aliens get no choice. Well, you do get a choice. Get the shot or get the hell out. It's that simple. And oh, by the way, since the shot takes a while, since you have to have 2 shots 2 weeks apart, guess who gets to sit in custody that whole time? Yes, the sweet, sweet, nourishing illegal alien. The Biden administration is importing COVID-19. And I suspect they imported the Delta variant. And they've spread it around the country. They've seeded the country because their rush for political advantage in the future for their party is more important to them than anybody's life. Don't let them tell you any differently. If they cared about the American people, they're sitting there going, we need to shut down travel to Europe because it's too dangerous. People could get COVID. If you really believe that, shut the southern border. And of course, as far as I can see, Ginger Goebbels, not a single person in that room, not a single reporter, alleged reporter, in that room upon hearing that announcement, maybe they did, but it would seem like that would be the clip that would go viral. What do you mean you're going to shut, and you're not going to shut down the southern border? You're still going to, but the vast, actually not even the vast majority, everybody but maybe two people in that room work for news outlets that pretend the southern border not only isn't in crisis, they pretend the southern border doesn't exist. They just, it's not a story. They're not interested. In June, nearly 200,000 people were captured. That's not counting the people that didn't get captured. Were captured crossing the southern border illegally. Illegal aliens, almost 200,000, 188,000 and change in the month of June. Before that, the average for the decade before that was 47,000 in June. That's the average in June. Three times that, almost four times that. And it's not a news story to the left. So when they say we're shutting down travel, or we're keeping travel restrictions in place for the rest of the world, you're sitting there and you, if you're an honest person, and that's the problem, but if you're an honest person, you go, wait a second, you got a huge gaping hole in your plan right there down at the southern border where you're welcoming, you know, a mid-level, mid-sized town every month into this country just in one region. Maybe you want to shut that down because they're coming from a part of the world that is not known for honest health care, for good health care, for hygiene, things like that. Maybe you want to take care of that issue if you're really seriously concerned about the Delta variant. But they're not. It's about power. Everything is about power. And you as an individual to the left are expendable, disposable, whatever. You're an obstacle. They can get you out of the way any way they can. They're perfectly fine with that. Just keep that in mind. Come next time you get a chance to vote. Meanwhile, while the southern border remains wide open, you've got people like Dr. Lena Wen, CNN medical analyst, former head of Planned Parenthood. Now she's a Georgetown professor. Of course she is, because liberals fail up. She went on CNN saying that vaccinated people need to be required to wear masks indefinitely. Indefinitely. And the argument for everything is wear a mask. New York City. New York Daily News. De Blasio to mandate COVID-19 vaccine or weekly tests for all 300,000 New York City municipal workers, including cops. Now, it was my understanding, as a watcher of the news, as a consumer of media, that the problem in this country was evil whitey, particular Christian whiteys, evangelical Christian whiteys, Trump supporters, the people who voted for Orange Man Bad, they are the problem. Now, New York City, how, huh? 22% or something like that is all the vote that Donald Trump got in New York City. Yet, if you look, these are the vaccination rates. According to the City Journal, it's a survey conducted by the city, by the mayor's office. This was put out. This is their official data. This is what the mayor is going off of. The percentage of the workforce in city government in New York City that has gotten vaccinated. NYPD, 43%. Only 43% of police officers. The Department of Corrections, only 42%. Have gotten vaccinated. Okay, maybe you could make a case that there is a disproportionate number of Trump supporters in those professions, along with the FDNY at 51%. Okay, sure. Now, the New York City health system and hospitals, they got a super big bump of Trump supporters? Probably not. Yet only 60% 60% of New York City health and hospital employees are vaccinated. 60%. Now, we're told constantly it's evil Trump supporters, it's Christian conservatives that are not getting vaccinated, even though it's not true. Okay, maybe. Now, the MTA, is the MTA a hotbed of Trump support that nobody knew about? It was only 65% of the MTA up there in New York have gotten vaccinated. Again, this is with the vaccine being available for more than 6 months and available for free for anybody who wants it. You can just go to like vaccine.gov or whatever. You can just Google vaccines near me and you will find where to get the vaccine. It's not complicated. But the kicker that lets you know that the Democrats are lying, that this is not a Trump supporter problem, is in addition to citywide, only 58% of New York City employees are vaccinated, which, you know, are you trying to tell me that almost half of New York City is employees, conservatives, Trump supporters? No, of course not. I don't think there'd be enough. There are far too many government employees. But the Department of Education only has 60% of them vaccinated. Now, the Department of Education, teachers, administrators, janitors, bus drivers, these are the people the teachers' unions went to bat for, allegedly, or so we're told, to make sure they got early access. They got cuts in line. Forget those senior citizens most at risk. Give us what we need so we can get back into schools. And only 60% of the entire Department of Education employees are vaccinated at this point? Their secret cabal of Trump supporters in the New York City school system? No, that's hilariously laughable. It's absurd on its face. So what's going on here? It doesn't matter. The Democrats' answer to every bit of reality is to simply lie again. And then when challenged on those lies, their response is, shut up and learn your place. Shut up and be quiet. Don't ask questions. Stop asking questions. And you should actually be afraid of a government that tells you to stop asking questions. That's one thing you should absolutely be afraid of. By the way, 60% of teachers in New York, 60% of teachers anywhere, 6 months plus, 7 months, 8 months really, into vaccine distribution with only 60% of teachers being vaccinated. That lets you know there's no way we could reopen the schools because people are going to die. That all that rhetoric from the left, the teachers' union, was garbage. It was complete and total garbage. It was all just for show. It was just for the cameras. What they were trying to do was to get to summer break. That was it. They wanted to get to summer break. They made it to summer break. Now what they're trying to do is to get to the end of the year. They need to get through Christmas break. So there you're seeing this Delta variant talk. Not saying it's not real. It is. But they're saying, well, vaccination rates are a problem. We can't get children vaccinated. So we can't open schools because children aren't vaccinated. We're waiting for the approval of children under 12. All right. So, you know, the kids over 12, they're going to be screwed. Because they can get the shot. So they're going to, maybe some of those teachers will have to go to school. But under 12, not so much. Not until, now either the vaccine works or it doesn't. It's that simple. Either the vaccine works or it doesn't. If it doesn't, somebody should let people know. But it's, what's ridiculous here is we're seeing people, and a lot of people who are vaccinated being tested. I think it's the, I was reading the coach of the Indianapolis Colts, Frank Reich. Reich, I think it's pronounced Reich. He is now quarantined. He has tested positive. He's fully vaccinated. He has tested positive, although he shows no symptoms. He didn't know he had it, which makes you wonder, why in the hell is he getting tested? Why are people who are, you know, not feeling well getting tested, or who are feeling fine getting tested? It doesn't make any sense, does it? No, it doesn't. But then so much of this doesn't make any sense. There are going to be people out there. We're told what? Something in the neighborhood of 90% of COVID cases were already asymptomatic, meaning you have no symptoms. You didn't know you had it. It's nothing. You might get a sniffle. You might get a sneeze every once in a while, and that's it. And then you just find out later, holy crap, I had it? I had no idea. Testing everybody constantly and testing people who are vaccinated doesn't make any sense if the vaccines work. If the vaccines work against the Delta variant, as we're told they do, then what does it matter if that person has it or not? Right? We don't know. Meanwhile, down under, I've been telling you a lot about Australia. I don't know why, but for some reason I found myself following a whole bunch of Australian news outlets down there just because they've gone crazy. Them and New Zealand. And Australia is far more interesting than New Zealand. Although it's huge, and per square mile, I would say New Zealand's probably more attractive, just because a lot of Australia is someplace I'd never want to go because there are bugs bigger than me. I just wouldn't want to be a part of it. And anything that's roaming the ground that's poisonous, not interested. But New Zealand, over the weekend, they've been locked down. I've told you about the Melbourne lockdown. There's the promise that Melbourne is going to be unlocked, possibly as early as Tuesday. And you're sitting there and you're going, well, why? Well, we told you, 82,000 tests, 111 positives the other day, and one death. And you're like, oh, well, lock it down. My God, I didn't realize that. Everybody tent up their house like they're in the last season of Breaking Bad and protect yourselves and your family. It's the only way to survive. Well, I want you to listen to this report because just like over here, over there, they have people who are not particularly fond of not having been charged with anything and not being guilty of anything, being placed under house arrest by their governments. And that's what the government has done down there. Now, I want to play this not just to illustrate what's going on in Australia, but I want to play this to illustrate that media throne sniffing of power and media obedience is not a uniquely American thing. It is not unique to the United States of America. This little weasel of a reporter they throw to here, he sounds like he could be a run-of-the-mill Democrat over here. It is nuts how biased media is around the globe, and it's only getting worse. And here's what's going on down under.
Let's go to Melbourne, where authorities are bracing for chaos this morning as anti-lockdown protesters prepare to take to the streets. Nine News reporter Patrick Mitchell is at Flagstaff Gardens for us in Melbourne. Pat, authorities say this won't derail plans to end the lockdown next week.
Well, that's certainly the fear, that the protest could delay that that lifting of the lockdown. And that's just so frustrating because we're so close to actually coming out of the lockdown. The health authorities, including the chief health officer, as well as the Premier, Daniel Andrews, say the numbers so far actually look quite good. So we've had 14 new cases yesterday. Just three of those had spent time in the community while infectious. That's the critical number we're looking for in order for the lockdown to be lifted as scheduled on Tuesday night, or with some restrictions still in place. But as we've seen, Charles, so many times in this pandemic already, it only takes the selfish actions of a few to spread the virus and then send millions into lockdown. So police will have a very, very strong police presence in Melbourne today. Anyone caught at that protest in Melbourne can expect a fine of more than $1,600.
Yeah, it's just the selfish few who are out there and they decide that they don't like to be stuck in their houses and blah, 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 crikey, crikey, crikey. You imagine a weaselly reporter? It's just a selfish few who don't like being placed under house arrest not having done anything wrong. Media is the media everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Did you hear that? You think, well, Australia, they're kind of like us. No, No, there's no other country on the planet that is like us. There were violent clashes. You can find the footage online. There were violent clashes between police and protesters. The protesters were doing what? They were marching through the streets. And what were the police doing? Trying to break them up and say, go home, go home, go home. You're supposed to be under house arrest. Go home. And they were tackling people and arresting people. Nothing like that would ever happen here. But it would happen here if it were Trump support, if it were conservatives. But BLM, Antifa, they can roam free and they're cheered as conquering heroes. But $1,600 fine for protesting your government's decree? See, that's the difference, and that's a fundamental difference between this country and most, pretty much every other country on the face of the earth. We recognize that our government was formed by the people. And the powers, the extent to which the government has powers, those powers are derived from the people. They are granting government use of those powers. That's it. You don't get to then go hog wild and do whatever you want. You are put in a box as government here in this country. In the rest of the world, you would think that the governments created the people. And they rule over those people. There's very little difference between, I mean, the structures of government are different, but there's very little difference in concept-wise between the structure and the weird way governments are thought of and conduct themselves in the rest of the world and the way monarchies back in the day did. They have divine providence. It's just that divine providence comes by way of election every once in a while, that if you are in power, you can do whatever the hell you want. Doesn't matter. I'm in power. I am here. I am in charge. And now you can get thrown out in the next election. But until that happens, and unless that happens, you are in charge. It's scary. It's the exact opposite of here, except for when Democrats are in charge. And then they just simply try to decree things to be. And sadly, we have a whole bunch of our population who are wildly, wildly obedient and all too happy to be so. You know, I kind of want to crack this, just talk about this for a second, because I keep seeing this going around and it is absurd. It is ridiculous. Pete Buttigieg, Mayor, Secretary Mayor Pete, and his husband, Chasten. I want to see some paperwork on that. I don't think anybody named their kid Chasten. And if they did, I think they didn't want kids. But apparently he is whining in the newspapers about not being able to afford to live in a nice place in Washington, D.C. Now, I've never lived in Washington, D.C. I've worked in Washington, D.C., and I've looked years ago at renting in Washington, D.C., but it was just way too expensive, and it, not even the convenience of it made it worthwhile. Even if I could afford it, I don't think I could bring myself to pay that much in rent. But the Washington Post has a piece. Of course they do. It's a fluff piece in official Washington. Chasten. Chasten. Just love that name. Chasten Buttigieg is, damn it, work. This thing is not reloading. Chasten Buttigieg is a stranger in a very strange land. And there's a picture of Chasten sitting there with a mask on. And you're sitting there going, why the hell are they interviewing, why are they profiling Pete Buttigieg's husband? Because they're liberals and that's what they do. But in the story, they find this. Quote, the Buttigieg's themselves moved into an 800 square foot one bedroom apartment near Eastern Market. Quote, we couldn't afford the one bedroom plus den, end quote, Chasten says. They chose the high-end building because of its location and the security it offered. The couple has faced threats and even break-ins back in South Bend. Yeah, they must have had some really crappy mayor over there. But the one bedroom, but the rent for the one bedrooms start at $4,500 per month. It was less when the Buttigieg's signed a lease last winter. Quote, we're doing fine ourselves, and yet the city is almost unaffordable, Chasten added, while driving their Subaru Outback up I-395, quote, which tells you how extremely unaffordable it is for many people. The transportation secretary's salary is $221,400. Now, this is supposed to make you feel upset. This is supposed to make you feel outraged. I'm just going to do some basic math here just to see. $221,400 divided by 52. That's $4,065.38 a week. You know, paid biweekly. You double that. You take out taxes, whatever. You can still see that they could easily afford a hell of a lot more. But I will point this out to you. That there is no, unless you are looking desperately to spend that much money, there is no apartment, one bedroom or otherwise, that is $4,500 a month. I know people who rent houses, big houses or bigger houses, three-bedroom houses, for significantly less than that per month. This guy is the Secretary of Transportation. He doesn't understand how roads work. You have to live close to the Department of Transportation so he can pretend to ride his bike. The guy has a driver. He could have gotten an apartment anywhere he wanted. He could have gotten a house wherever he wanted. You're making $250,000 a year because it's not just the salary. You get the stipends. You get the things are taken care of. You're making a lot more than that. And you can't figure out a way to afford to live? You shouldn't be in charge of a department, bro. Sorry. Or you shouldn't have your husband running around doing lifestyle posts and profiles in the Washington Post, because it just makes you look like an idiot. Just makes you look like an idiot. Speaking of idiots, Hunter Biden. His big art sale's coming up. Big day's coming up for Hunter Biden. He's not only got to hold it together and not get arrested before his art shows, he has to really kind of be soberish when he meets with potential buyers so that he, with a wink and a nod, can make it be known that should they drop $500,000 on his paint by numbers, that they will get a return on that investment. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We've gone through all of that in recent days and the garbage that's going around there. But what's interesting is over the weekend, CNN convened a panel on the appearance of impropriety of Hunter Biden, the booger sugar queen, king himself, conducting an art sale where the guy's never sold any piece of art, whatever. I don't even know that he's ever sold anything before. So it seems a bit odd, seems a bit corrupt there, certainly rife for corruption. Now, what you're going to hear is a panel, you're going to hear two journalists. Both work for CNN, but it's a panel of five women. They're all quote-unquote journalists. They're all nodding in agreement. They're, oh, yeah, no, this is weird. It's a bad, bad look. Not one of them will actually do a story on it. They'll talk about how it's a bad look and do a segment and then go, oh, shucks. But they won't actually do an in-depth story. They won't do any research because to do a story on Hunter Biden that talks about corruption in the Biden family, A, could make Joe Biden look bad, and B, might have to touch on the existence of his laptop. And these people make their living pretending that Hunter Biden's laptop doesn't exist. So they can say, we checked the box. We talked about that over the weekend on a show on CNN that nobody was watching. Five women sitting around gabbing about stuff, I think it was called. This first clip is Abby Phillips. She is the darling over there at CNN of the moment. It probably won't last. They go through a lot of them. But she is a woman of color, so they love her at the moment. She's a left-wing hack. I don't understand. You should not have your journalists hosting opinion shows. If you want to do if you want to be serious about journalism, you should not. And any newspaper that has their journalists as contributors on cable news should be given a choice. You can either be a cable news pundit or you're fired. Like, that's it. You cannot be a journalist and write your stories and then go out there and give your opinions. It just makes your work look that much worse. Anyway, Abby Phillips has some thoughts about Hunter Biden's art sale. And she admits, yeah, you know, this sure looks bad. Sure looks bad. God.
One art Pulitzer Prize winning art critic says that he thinks that Hunter Biden's art is kind of like a cafe painter. He says you wouldn't, unless you were related to the artist, spent more than $1,000 on it. But then another art critic who actually likes Hunter Biden's work also says this: anybody who buys it would be guaranteed instant profit. He's the president's son. So Obviously, this is a problem, an ethical problem, one of optics, but also just from a practical perspective.
Obviously, this is a... Yeah, the story's been around for quite a while. Now CNN's getting around to talk about it. They'll talk about it when they have tried every other option, when every other option has been exhausted. But obviously, this is a bit of an ethical problem. Whoa, wait a second. Finally, somebody in the media is admitting that there are ethical issues in the Biden administration, that sniffy, gropey, grabby Uncle Joe Biden might not be on the up and up. Maybe you go down that road too far, you might have to talk to Tara Reid again. Huh? Now, again, in this clown car, these five people, these five women sitting around gabbing. I think that should be a show on CNN. Five chicks gabbing. This is Melanie Zanoza, I don't know how you pronounce her last name. I don't care. She's a CNN reporter. She, too, is going, yeah, you know, this sure looks bad. They're very casual about what is obviously rife for at least the potential of corruption at a bare minimum.
Like, this is a huge optics problem and ethics problem, and making it more challenging is that it is art and the value is assigned. I mean, that's why you have critics saying different things. And so obviously the White House is trying to get some sort of wrap around this. They try to come up with an arrangement that could make it look a little bit better. But, you know, they're worried about it.
They're worried about it. Why? Why would they be worried about it? There are five people right there charged with covering the White House. This is the first time any of you have mentioned it in your lives. It'll also likely be the last time any of you will mention it in your lives. What does the White House have to be worried about? Are one of you really going to go there and go after Ginger Goebbels and say, look, this is a massive problem. Why don't we know everything about this? Make it as transparent as possible. How do we know some foreign government, some foreign entity, or some domestic entity with business before the government isn't trying to buy influence? The president's son talking to the president is not monitored. There is no way to know what they talk about. We've already proven that Joe lied about not ever having talked to Hunter about his business. So how can we be sure this is on the up and up? There isn't a single person in the White House press corps, except for maybe two, who would ask those questions. So, and it sure as hell would be none of them at this table. So they can talk about, well, there's all sorts of conflicts, all they want. You're a part of the biggest conflict of interest ever. Opinion people passing themselves off as journalists. So you want to talk about conflicts of interest, find a mirror, honey. Lastly, talking about people making the media look bad, and this isn't just a crack about her looks. But Jennifer Rubin over at the Washington Post, she's supposedly the conservative. There's literally nothing she's conservative on, but, you know, whatever. This bridge troll over there has a piece. Enough already. It's time for vaccine entry passes. She tweets out this. There's no reason the White House cannot strongly encourage states, localities, and private entities to start requiring proof of vaccination. It could cajole major employers and universities, healthcare facilities, and big retail chains to follow suit. Yes, we have the left loves. Do you have your papers? Your papers, please. Do you have your papers? They love that. They want to get back to their greatest hits. They always go back to the well. The bridge troll over there, Jennifer Rubin, is really just one of the worst human beings on the face of the earth. That she is allowed to call herself a conservative is like Michael Steele calling himself a conservative. He should probably just marry Jennifer Rubin. They could have children with soft skulls that never harden throughout their entire lives. Vaccine passport's bad, but how about proof of vaccine to do anything? Okay, go ahead and put that out there. But then you can't complain when other people don't go that route. You want to split this country apart? That's a good way to do it. We're out of time for today. Thank you guys for listening and all of that good stuff. Don't be a bridge troll. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks.
But it's very, very different when you poke fun at people of color.